Hello there, and welcome to the Thinking Fellows podcast. My name is Caleb. Today I'm joined by my father, Dr. Scott Keith, and by Adam Francisco. The Thinking Fellows is part of the 1517 podcast network of shows. You can go to 1517.org/podcast to see all of our episodes there. And of course, 1517 is more than a podcast network. You can go to 1517.org on our homepage to see everything we do each week, which includes daily blogs, weekly preaching helps. We have regular video content, a couple conferences a year, and the like. In fact, the conferences are booming right now. We did sell out of tickets for Here We Still Stand 2022. If you listened to the last episode, at the very beginning, I think you heard a funny dialogue about us trying to figure out if there were tickets left or not.
And there are not.
There are not. And I added that to the top of the show notes, a big bold note that we were sold out. And by the time this one's recording, if there are tickets left to Bentonville, I will put a link into the top of that. That's our regional conference in Northwest Arkansas. It's a little shorter than Here We Still Stand, but it's still a great venue. The biggest difference is there are no breakouts. There are just plenary talks over those 2 days. That format is great because it also leaves a lot of room for just hanging out. And so over those 2 days, the Bentonville Regional Conference is great. And so if you wanted to go to Here We Still Stand but got sold out really quickly, I would look into that while we have a handful of tickets remaining to Bentonville. Okay, guys. Let's see. November 8th, last week, Election Day, midterms. Welcome to...
Still being counted.
The Thinking Fellows... political edition. No, just kidding. I'm sure everybody here has heard a lot about it. There was, you know, polling that seemingly went wrong and the like.
That's surprising. That never happened.
That never happens. Yeah, polls are never incorrect, but yeah. Yet they were this time. That may be good news or bad news, depending on which side of the political aisle in the United States you are on or not on. But there's sort of a thing that goes around with elections, especially midterms like this, where people perceive that there's a lot on the line, or that a big change could happen if you rally enough people around. And that's, you know, everybody's talking about it and engaged in it. And, I think the behavior generally, especially if, you're part of a political party that has a lot to gain or to lose, is to sort of toss all of your hope into that election about the way your life or the world around you is going to be.
Well, in fact, if you listen to any sort of commentary, and I think whether on either side, because I heard commentary on both sides, this was very much posed, as many elections have for the last, I'm sure through all of time, but I've noticed it quite a bit since, you know, the last 10 years or so, that every election has become the most important election in the history of this country. If Republicans don't win, this country is over. If Democrats don't win, this country is over. And then, you know, seemingly, in my opinion, what happens is whichever party gets elected, you either like or dislike some of the stuff that they do. You find some of it good, or you find some of it bad. You find some of it morally great or morally reprehensible. But at the end of the day, you know, for the most part, life just goes on. And again, there may be things that have changed that you don't like so much, but none of them in the last 10 years that I've noticed, since they've been saying this is the most important election in the history of the country, and if it doesn't go our way, things are going to collapse, none of that has yet to come true.
And I think in addition to that, or maybe it's... a cause of it or a symptom of what you're describing, is there seems to be heightened anxiety amongst most people about the political situation that we live in. We hear on repeat that the United States is more divided than it's ever been, kind of stuff. Now, that may or may not be true, but it's easy to feel that way. And when you're hearing it from both sides, that the fate of your life is in the balance with these things, it's easy to feel anxious about it. And you see a lot of people posting about that. I think on both sides, sort of dramatized, you know, I'm leaving my state if this doesn't happen, or I don't know what we're going to do.
We're leaving the country if this person gets elected president.
good luck with that, by the way. The United States is the easiest country in the world to move into, and it's the hardest one to get out of. Yeah.
They really like your tax dollars.
It's actually
here.
Not easy to get out of the United States. It's easy to get out of and stay permanently in another place. Yeah.
Welcome to paying taxes in two countries for the rest of your life.
Yeah, that's strange that they get to do that. Yeah. But so then when things inevitably, when these elections come around, the thing Adam actually suggested this episode, which was there's a verse, Psalm 175, Adam?
146.
146,
I don't think there is a Psalm 175.
Whoa, yeah, you're right. I'm just not thinking. Whatever.
I mean, 146 is almost the end. Was it go to 150?
People thought it was like Psalm 318 originally, so, you know.
Psalm 598. I studied the Bible.
Well, yeah, you know what? As I think about, as I watch all the rhetoric and the social media blow up and so on, any time we're near some political event like an election, I think of Psalm 146, because I'm such a pious person, of course. Yeah. But it does come to mind, Psalm 146, is it 2 and 3, put not your trust in princes, in a son of man in whom there is no salvation. When his breath departs, he returns to the earth. On that very day, his plans perish. And, you know, you were talking about some of the anxiety you see out there. I think so much of that is fueled by social media and this sort of soundbite-y type of news that we get that's tailored to by algorithms or whatever, to our social media and our normal search engines, I guess. But also, there is that. I also think, though, our anxiety is ratcheted up a bit, too, because our culture... American culture has changed, I think it's safe to say, quite radically from 15 years ago, 20 years
ago. Yeah, I think that's safe to say.
In the journal First Things, I guess it was the most recent edition, they ran an article, a really interesting article on the three stages of the decline of Christianity and its influence or acceptance in America. And if I remember correctly, 2015... the author argues that that's the beginning, and he's not stuck on those or his dating or his chronology, but 2015 begins the time where we move into a stage where Christianity is no longer just sort of like one sort of thing out there among others, but rather is rejected and seen as a problem in American culture.
Why 2015? What
I forget how I
got what's sort of here. Like the... The pushover point.
Isn't
like,
2015 the institution of gay marriage legalized in the United States?
Obergefell. Yeah, it's 2014. I apologize. The Obergefell case.
Yeah.
So if that's in the culture, and, you know, just anecdotally, you know, if you're not living in some, as I heard it described the other day from one of our friends, a third world mountain community, like you guys live in, but you're living in or near an urban environment, but even in, I just heard this morning in some rural farm community here in Illinois, the LGBTQI agenda being pushed in a farm, you know, a high school with maybe 150 students in it, you know, of children of farmers is being pushed on them. So you see all this stuff going around you, and you hear all get all this stuff on politics and the Democratic Party, for example, pushing this particular agenda, and things seem pretty bad. At the same time, Scott, you know more than us, you being the resident American historian.
Oh my gosh.
Things have always been kind of
wonky.
Wonky in America.
Yeah,
I've been. I was kind of surprised by. I mean, I guess you suppose that this happens, but just sort of as I've been reading more about American history and from a broader set of sources, how colored the way you learn American history in schools, and I didn't even just go to public school. I went to Lutheran schools, right, using various curriculums, but is, and that it excludes, it tries to make it look like it's all you know, been kind of a cohesive thing. But you start reading and it's like, take an issue like fake news or biased media today, right? Well, during the first several presidencies in the United States, the major newspapers that were publishing news about the federal government were owned by and operated by political people on either side trying to essentially run smear campaigns against the other candidate. And
or those were by various newspapers.
Yeah.
I mean, William Randolph Hearst was sort of renowned for buying newspapers in parts of the country. He got into the business sort of organically originally, but then he had political ambitions, and he would, once he had political ambitions, he would buy newspapers in the markets where he needed more political support, and those newspapers would exclusively run stories that were like pro William Randolph Hearst to get him elected.
Well, it helps put a broader perspective on like how long some of the things we consider modern atrocities politically have been going on for.
Well, you think like threats, you know, the current one, threats to democracy. I mean, that's a difficult thing to put your finger on when the threats to democracy and your rights to vote have been going on for years and are arguably, I think, you know, your ability to have sort of the one man, one vote is stronger now than it's probably ever been in American history. And when you see people saying that, you know, democracy is going to be over because of this, that, or the other, it seems a little disingenuous if you have any sort of knowledge of things that have happened in this country in the past. And again, like I said, this has gotten through, you know, we've had committees in this country in various times in the past that were dedicated strictly, that were run by the federal government, that were strictly dedicated to monitoring and controlling your private speech, even up to in your home. You know, and where people would come and knock on your door if you said the wrong thing, and you could be arrested for having said the wrong thing at the grocery store. And by the wrong thing, you're talking about criticizing the actions of a president, you know, and taken away and arrested. I mean, on the whole, I'm not aware of this happening today,
right?
Which would, I think, lend some credence to the fact that likely things have been worse in the past than they are now, and that this isn't the worst occasion ever. I wanted to say to kind of bring this around to more like Thinking Fellows-ish topic. One of the things I think is going on, and I don't know if this first thing's, is it the journal or the magazine that the article was in?
The journal.
The journal. Article points this out, but the decline in, you could just generally call it religiosity in America, is reaching like European levels for the first time in our history. In other words, fewer people are religious in America of any stripe now. For America, that has always classically been very Christian, that typically means fewer people are Christian now than they have ever been. But you could just say religious of any stripe now than they have ever been in this country. We also haven't had, you know, the 100 years that Europe has to deal with that. This is happening very quickly, and it's happening like as we speak.
And could we add that instead of a generic sort of agnosticism, it's being replaced by an ideological or religious sort of movement?
Well, one of the things I was going to say that I think is happening is that people now seem to be more politically aware. Now, they still say that it's only like 3% of the country is, but, you know, voter turnout's been at all time highs over the last, you know, several elections, lends the other way. And if you have any kind of social media, even if yours is like mine and it's mostly VW buses, 4x4 trucks and mountain bikes, that you still see this stuff, right? And it still crosses your feet, and you almost have no hope against being engaged. In other words, you're going to be bombarded with it whether you like it or not. I had the misfortune of watching YouTube during election season, because mountain bike shows. And at the, I was just bombarded. I mean, I don't pay for the YouTube Pro or whatever it's called, but I'm
premium. Yeah.
I'm probably gonna, because it was just bombarded. And
I did right before election season, paid for premium, and boy, howdy, I haven't seen an ad in ages, and it's
nice.
Yeah,
but it was just, I mean, it's, and it's everything. It's the politics that they, that the algorithm thinks that you agree with, and the algorithm that thinks it needs to convince you of. You see all of that, right? Yeah. And it's constant. And it's not even like old TV, which is the commercials on there was horrible because you'd have like, you know, Dawn soap mixed in with a political ad. These were like political ad, political ad, political ad, political ad. Hey, mountain bike show. And it was just nerve wracking. But some people have suggested that as religion declines, what is being replaced with is a politicization of people. But not like the classic, hey, I'm a Republican, I'm a Democrat. More like, these are my issues, and these issues are moral imperatives. And if you don't agree with me on this issue, you're actually disagreeing with my new religion, which is the moral imperative of, and you can pick it. You can honestly kind of pick it on both sides. Could say, the moral imperative of the woke agenda on the one side, and you could say the moral imperative of nationalism on the other side. And if you don't agree with this, you're not just having an intellectual disagreement with me over a set of political ideals. You're actually attacking my morality.
And if you're not in on all points, are you a true believer kind of thing? Right. So maybe you, sympathize with nationalism to a certain degree, but you also care about conservation or something like this, right? Now you can't be in because...
Well, it's as polarizing as the critics of religion have always said religion is, right?
Yeah.
So the big criticism of Christianity before Christianity started to decline is that Christians had the nerve to say, we need to evangelize the world because if we don't evangelize them, if they don't believe in Jesus, they're going to hell. Like, oh my gosh, you think people are going to hell? That's so polarizing, right? Well, now it's, I mean, you could say the same thing. If you don't believe in the woke agenda, you're amoral and you're going, you know, you're, I don't know if they'd say you're going to hell, but it's implied. And the same thing on the other side. Like if you don't support Trump, you know, you're immoral.
Or America first,
you're immoral. And the problem is with both of those perspectives and both of those sort of sides of the moral, quote unquote, moral spectrum, the base for the morality, the new morality is floating in thin air. There's not a base for it. And so it changes, right? And it changes quickly and constantly. And so one of the things that people who maybe are still religious, you could even say still biblically centered and even confessional to some degree, you have a foundation on which you're basing your ideas of right and wrong. And so you find it difficult to keep up when sort of the societal expectations of what it means to be a moral person and what it means to be immoral person are changing so quickly because your foundations for that haven't changed. And then all of a sudden, elections come along and you're told to put your trust in this prince or that prince because this prince or that prince is going to protect what is good, right, and holy. Although what's good, right, and holy is now floating in midair. And you don't, I would argue that even the people, the princes that are being elected to protect what's good, right, and holy don't know what they're protecting half of the time. Thus, we see massive swings in positions constantly. Like, you could even take, and I'm not trying to criticize the Biden administration or whatever, but it's a point of fact that his position on many things has dramatically changed through the years. I mean, he was, I believe, one of the authors of the 1990s crime bill under Bill Clinton.
To put this in perspective, Biden has been, at a national level in holding political office at a national level for 18% of American history, right? So it wouldn't be surprising to say his political positions have changed during 18% of American history.
No, that's true. So maybe give him a little break, because you can see it with even people that have been in office for not as long, right? That positions change quickly, and that's because morality is changing quickly, and what they're supposed to be for and what they're supposed to be against is changing quickly.
Yeah, and in the backdrop of sort of a populist arena where to get into office or to stay into office, you have to change your position based on the whims of the people you need, whose vote you need.
Well, that's maybe even a better example. And then take it, like, if people are gleaning that I'm more libertarian than Republican, so don't get all upset with me if you think I'm defending Republicans. I think they're ridiculous on a lot of things. But having said that,
I have text messages that say it a little stronger than that.
But probably. having said that, that's one of the things that you can see people currently in office that were even in office, 10 years ago, where that agenda has completely changed 15 years ago. I mean, think like low taxes, low spending, sort of fiscal awareness and fiscal conservatism that is now like, when's the last time you heard anybody talk about that? It's been a hot minute. Now, some people are starting to talk about it now because of massive inflation and whatnot, but it took massive inflation to get this out of the people who historically, that was their position. So, but that hadn't even always historically been their position either.
No, they've had like strong military spending, for instance,
But when the less, the society at large sort of is leaning on an objective standard for this.
Now,
biblical standard, I would argue, the more they're going to be, and the less religious they are, the more this type of thing, culture, politics will become their religion. And when that's the case, who are you going to trust? You're going to trust in the princes. And when you think you got the wrong prince, you're going to freak out.
I'd like to sort of talk about an angle of the don't trust in princes posting that I see that is positive and negative, which is during like election day, it's fair to say, you'll see if you're on Twitter or Facebook, I'm sure too, and stuff in your timeline, if you follow other Christians throughout the day, as the election starts going one way or the other, you will see more and more people post don't trust in princes. Right.
Oh, really?
Now,
is that how I got this idea?
No, wait. So no. there's two things about this. Number one, it's sort of I've seen it used as a combative way to sort of shame other Christians who are talking about the election in certain terms. Mm. You also see it as sort of certain people are posting really, really politically, and then once their party starts losing, start posting "Don't trust in princes," right? It can be a very convenient phrase
both ways.
To say, I trust in princes when it's my prince, but I don't trust in princes when it's the other prince.
That's the irony, is we all trust in princes when it's the prince we like.
Yeah, of course we do. Yeah. I haven't
personally had one of those in a long time.
What I would say is about the side where I see a post strategically timed to maybe shame, a subset of Christians really talking about an election or political things, and it's hard because at the end of the day we have to define what trust means here, because you need to, especially if you live in the United States, vocationally you have civic ability to vote, and it's
some might even call it a duty.
Yeah, a duty. Vocation, the place you live in, the people you live with, would dictate that it's probably important to care about politics and to exercise your rights or your duties politically when possible. And we don't want people, or we wouldn't be advocating for people to say, hey, don't trust in princes. That means don't vote, or that means don't be interested in who's getting elected to your local school board, or who your governor is, or who your senator or congressional representative are. You should be dispassionate and disinterested in something like politics because we don't trust in princes. And I think the way to handle this is to define trust and do it sort of like we do in the small catechism, fear, love, and trust in God, that trust has something here to do with where you place your faith, where you place your hope for not just what your life kind of looks like now, but what you put sort of ultimate hope into, what your fate is tied to, or what your being is tied to. What you trust in defines your being, kind of thing. And so we can start to distinguish between somebody who is active politically because of vocation and duty, and this tip of the scales where it becomes, where your prince becomes your God.
Well, I think that's the trust there. I mean, if you were to take that, the psalm is telling you your hope is in the Lord. Thus, your trust is in the Lord, the God of Jacob, the God who in Psalms will send the Messiah, and our day has sent the Messiah for you. That is where your hope, that is where your trust is. So don't put your trust in any other person. If your trust is in God alone on account of Christ, your trust is then not in any other person. Now, what does this mean, your trust? This means your hope. You know, what at the end of the day, who will be your salvation? Who will be your redemption? Who will be the one who cares for you? Who will be the one whose love for you sustains? Who will be the one whose desire for you will always be for your good? Don't put your trust in a prince if that's what you're looking for, because you will not find that in another person, another simple person who, just like you, will someday die. Even if their intentions seemed good while they were alive, the moment they die, all of their plans will fall to the and go the way of all men and will
and,
perish.
Yeah, we're sort of used to this with these, you know, every 2 years, various election cycles. Their plan may even die if power shifts in the Senate or in Congress, right? Like, they might not even have to die. They could just get unelected, and all of a sudden that misplaced trust turns into sort of hopelessness instantaneously.
Or you could have such a slim majority in whatever House of Congress you were hoping for that one person could have a heart attack and your majority's gone. You know, it's like, it's do not put your trust in here. If you read further in Psalm 146, it says, "Blessed is he whose help is in the God of Jacob, whose hope is in the Lord his God, who made heaven and earth, the sea, and all that is in them, who keeps his faith forever, who executes justice for the oppressed, who gives food to the hungry. The Lord sets prisoners free." So if you're looking to be set free, look to the Lord. If you're looking for him who executes justice for the oppressed, look to the Lord, not to another man. Who gives food to the hungry, look to the Lord. Who will keep faith for you forever, look to the Lord.
That's very, you know, Habakkuk and Romans 1:17 there.
Yeah. I mean, you can say, you know, a la Romans 13, how does the Lord execute justice for the oppressed? He does that through the princes who have the power of the sword, right? And so it's not that your life won't be wrapped up with these princes no matter what you do.
Right.
They will be, right? And it's not that you will never have any sort of political calling. You might, right? Or civic duty. You do. But yeah, ultimate trust.
Yeah, and it's not that you should disrespect your princes.
Right.
You should pray for them and honor them and so on. But I think behind all this in Psalm 146 it's real basic, but it's also pretty profound, if you will, Christian political philosophy. That is, our hope is in the ultimate, in the eternal things. Everything else is penultimate.
Yeah.
It dies with man.
Yeah.
And so I think what the psalm does is just tempers your I don't know if it's your attitude or your conviction in the political arena. It tells you, regardless of whether your guy or gal gets in or not, they will at some point fail you because they're temporal. They're part of the fallen created order. And if there is any real hope, this is reminding us of, if you will, the gospel. It's a hope in God or in the Lord, a hope in his son. And that's it. that's, I think that's political, Christian political philosophy wrapped up in a nutshell. Trust in God and God alone for the things that matter, for the things in this, in temporal, in the temporal realm. You ought to honor and pray for your princes, even if you don't like them. But you certainly don't put all your trust or your stock or hope in some temporal thing that's part of this fallen world.
Well, I think hope is the right word, because with hope, what you're striving after is an ultimate sense that somebody is there for you, to protect you, to care for you, to love you, to hold, as the psalm says, hold faith with you. And the warning in the psalm is, don't expect that from these people. You know, what you might be able to expect from them is that they do their civic duty when they become elected, when they come into office. But that's it. That's it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and then you can stop looking for somebody who's going to accomplish like everything in one term, right? Like, you know, living in California, the only prince I'm looking for at this point is one who will like lower costs and taxes. Like, I'm going to leave every other agenda. Just, I care about them, but like, I'm not going to hope that they change. I just want,
well,
I just want lower
costs.
Of, you know,
this is going to sound probably a little too conservative, but whatever. It's kind of an argument for expecting less out of the people who represent you in government.
Yes.
Right.
And not expecting them to be able to solve every single one of your dilemmas. It's why when we start talking about political issues, as though they're sort of ultimately eschatological in nature, like in things in nature, or what do they keep saying with climate change? It's a it's an ultimate issue, right? It's a survival level issue, and whether it is or it isn't, right? And that they, as human beings, are the ones that have the ultimate solution.
Right.
And that's the part that you sort of think, I don't know.
It's funny when they use that language, this temporal thing is the ultimate issue.
Right.
It's a real clue into their worldview, that there is nothing beyond time, space, right, matter, and energy.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
It tells you that what you're like on a worldview level, or from a worldview perspective, you're dealing with materialists.
Right.
Practical or ideological. And
right. So,
like you said just a bit earlier, Scott, with this psalm and what we've been, you know, what the Christian approaching politics, our attitude ought to be one of moderation.
Yeah.
You know, in that we just don't expect. It's like our episode we did on low anthropology or whatever the title was.
Just don't expect.
Let's not be too surprised when princes or the people that put princes in power stink, as in the case of Pennsylvania.
Yeah.
If I can get Ryle things up. Can you imagine?
I mean, just expect weird stuff.
Fetterman? Really?
Just expect weird stuff to happen. That's what I'd say. Yeah, I mean, these are sinners voting for sinners.
Yes.
I was going to say, too.
Sinners voting for sinners in an unmoderated world. And by moderated, I mean in a world that is less and less moderated by a sense of ultimate right and wrong is handed down by a creator who loves you and has given you those ideas of right and wrong for your support and care. You lose that. And now you really shouldn't expect much.
And a prince is not going to change the people around you that you live with, right? So, like, if you're bemoaning living, and rightfully so, even living, you know, amongst sort of amoral materialists who, you know, maybe you think have a misguided worldview or don't have an ethics grounded in anything real. You know, electing the right prince is not going to all of a sudden make your neighbors have the same ethical disposition as you or the same worldview as you, right? It, especially on the national level, if you know, conservatives had taken control of the Senate, would my neighbors have changed in California here? No, not at all.
In fact, that goes the other way, right? So there'd be a certain amount of groundswell that would, especially in a state like this, it would need to happen before those. Before those princes would change.
You know, theoretically, you're still living in, if you live in a neighborhood full of opposition against you, you're still going to be living there.
But let me just say again before we get too like specific here, Adam, and say.
Oh, because I named names. Sorry.
You're like, maybe my voice was disguised. Maybe they thought that was Caleb. Just, no, this is an argument for just not make, and I think you said it correctly before, just not making this ultimate, right? You have evidence all around you that this is not ultimate, right? When it goes right, you have that evidence. When it goes wrong, you have that evidence. And if you can't see that as evidence, yeah, I would say refer back to the show we did on low anthropology. Because your anthropology regarding the ability of fallen human sinners to, one, put their own self-interest aside long enough to just neutrally serve all the people that they elected, and two, that they actually, as people who are limited by their own physical abilities, have the power to change things that much, it's just not a reality. So at the end of the day, I think this is an argument for just not caring about it. Of course you care about it. You care about it on both sides when things change in directions that you don't agree with. But just realizing that your ultimate hope is not in these princes. It's not in these temporal things. It's in the God who has said he loves you, and on account of that love has sent his son to die for you. And at the end of the day, that is where your hope is. That is where your trust is. That is where your faith is. And if it is there, whether or not things seem to be going very, very south for you in this world or in the world, and you think you're noticing it, you still know that you're not putting your hope and your faith in that.
Right.
Again, doesn't mean that you don't have some responsibility to act civically or politically to
respond to it
or to support ideas that you think can make it better while we're still here before the Lord comes again. It's not saying that. It's just saying, boy, if you're despondent and you feel like there's no hope because of what's going on in the culture, in the world, and in politics, your hope is being placed in the wrong place.
Yeah. That's a good nugget right there.
Yeah, I think that's great. Because I'd hate for this to be something like discouraging people from being politically active in the ways that they're called to be. So, and sometimes I think that's how that verse can be interpreted when used on, you know, like we've been talking about problems with social media and stuff, which is, if you're politically active to X degree, you are placing your trust in princes. I think it really does have to do with, if the only thing you can think about and talk about is the world ending because your political party is not in power, is losing power, or not succeeding, that's where that would be starting to occur. Not just because you vote for or are advocating for somebody else or other people to vote for in a particular way. So, Adam, you got any closing comments? This was your show idea, after all.
Yeah, it kind of went in a different direction than I thought it would go.
Oh, sorry.
You know what I was thinking, though, is there's a great and fairly famous speech from the ancient world by a general in Athens named Pericles, who talks about the best type of people at voting booths are those who come to the task of voting with the concerns of a parent. Because, you know, they're not just thinking about the immediate now, but about how this is going to affect generations down the line. But I was thinking that in light of especially your interest, Scott, in like the demographic decline. You know, you recommended that book, What to Expect When Nobody's Expecting.
Yeah, it's going to really mess up your day.
Yeah, I mean, just to maybe give a realistic perspective, things are bad, and they're probably going to get much worse. I think, isn't Jordan Peterson say something like that?
He says things are bad and they're probably worse than you think. He's talking about individual. So. This is almost putting in like a little break in this show and going on to that other agenda that I like so much. But I honestly think that if you are sort of worried about sort of the temporal stuff going on, the antenatal stuff is probably the biggest thing to worry about.
It's probably the scariest and one of the least talked about.
Yeah. I think it's the scariest. So.
Yeah. You should clue in that. Is it the Doors who sang that song? This is the End. Is it the Doors?
I don't know.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, thank you guys. Good episode. We will catch you next time. If you enjoyed this episode of the Thinking Fellows podcast, there's a couple things you can do to support the show or maybe even just catch it in the future. The first thing you can do is subscribe in your favorite podcasting app. Subscribing to the Thinking Fellows and all 1517 podcasts is free. You can do that very easily on things like Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Overcast, Podcast Addict, basically anywhere that podcasts are found. You can skim through our whole library of podcasts over at 1517.org/podcasts. There you can see the other shows that 1517 produces. And if there's anything interesting to you there, you can add it in your podcasting app as well. We are towards the end of our giving, our year, you know, sort of as fundraising goes at 1517. And we're actually, that tends to be the most important part of our year for fundraising. And so in a couple of weeks is Giving Tuesday. We will be doing a campaign for that. But if you set up, if you go to 1517.org/donate, you can support the Thinking Fellows, the 1517 Podcast Network, and 1517 in general, especially as we ramp up to conclude giving for 2022 and hit our goals. And those will be Our Giving Tuesday goal will be coming out shortly, and you can see what you can do there to help us finish out the year strong. We will catch you next time. Bye.